for petitioners.
May it please the board, Mr. Tom Matlock and Mr. Ramon Garcia present arguments for the petitioners. Mr. Tom Matlock will argue first.
May it please the court. I'm Tom Matlock from McAllen, along with Ramon Garcia of Edinburgh. We represent the petitioners in this case. With the court's permission, I will open for 15 to 20 minutes. I've asked for lights at 15 and 20, defer to Mr. Garcia unless we've covered it, and then one of us will come back in rebuttal. This is an appeal from a directed verdict. The petitioners were the plaintiffs below. It is a wrongful death case. The parties are mother, Maria Garza, her daughter, Celia Garza, and Celia's child, Miguel Angel De La Rosa, Jr. De La Rosa, Jr. was born in October of 1984. His mother, Celia, was 14 years old at the time. Mike De La Rosa, Sr. is alleged by petitioners to have been the father of De La Rosa, Jr. The father, De La Rosa, Sr., died in April of 1984, about 6 months before the baby was born. Sr. was 17 when he died. Respondent, defendant below, Maverick Market, operates convenience stores in South Texas. One of those stores, it is alleged by petitioners, sold beer to Mike Sr. and his buddy, Jesus Escobar. They sold a lot of beer one day. And this, it caused the boys to get drunk and caused a two-vehicle accident. Petitioners here were not the original plaintiffs in the trial court. The original plaintiffs were some girls who were in the other vehicle. Leonela De La Rosa, who was Mike Sr.'s mother, intervened in that lawsuit. Subsequently, your petitioners here intervened in that lawsuit. All parties settled in that case except for Mike De La Rosa Jr., the infant represented by his minor mother and his grandmother. At the close of the case, Judge Salinas in Hidalgo County directed a verdict on behalf of defendant on two basic grounds. Number one, the dram shop issue grounds, and number two, on the grounds that an unrecognized, posthumous, illegitimate child has no standing to sue for the wrongful death of his alleged father. I believe the dram shop issues are now settled. This case was tried before this court issued its opinion in the Jolimo El Chico Pool cases. The Court of Appeals in Corpus Christi affirmed Judge Salinas' directed verdict.
Counsel, there's a matter of curiosity. If this case gets reversed and sent back, are you faced with a new statute that replaces Jolimo and those other cases?
Yes, I believe so, but I don't believe there will be any. There may be a question of negligence, but our argument on negligence is that this convenience store sold six packs of beer to two minor boys over the course of an afternoon. They bought a six pack, drank it, went back to the same store, bought a couple more six pack, continued to drive around and drink, and after either five or six had this wreck. And at our proof is that, number one, at least one of the boys was a minor during this course of events, and they did sell to him. And number two, as the afternoon wore on, they were both visibly drunk. So we have two statutory violations on our negligence part of the case.
But we don't have that issue up here.
No, sir. I don't believe that issue is here.
What did the Corpus Christi court do with that issue?
They reversed Judge Salinas on the point, because by the time it got to Corpus Christi, the El Chico against Poole and Jolimo case had already been decided, and the Jolimo, in fact, came out of Corpus, so they were very familiar with it. I don't think that issue is before this court today. What the Court of Appeals held, and we respectfully suggest this is where they erred, is that there was no evidence in the record to establish that Junior was the child of the deceased. And we respectfully suggest they erred both on factual grounds and on legal grounds. First of all, there was the testimony of the minor mother, Celia, and she testified that De La Rosa Sr. was her boyfriend. They had relations. He was the only one with whom she had relations, and he was the father. Additionally, Leonella, who was Senior's mother, recognized the baby as her grandchild. She testified, "I believe him to be my grandchild. He looks like my son." In addition, there were photographs in evidence that showed a familial resemblance between the baby and the decedent. Finally, there was the hospital records. But more finally, there was a decree of legitimation. Prior to the trial of the case, it was filed in the district courts in Hidalgo County pursuant to Chapter 13 of the Family Code, a petition for legitimation. Keep in mind, by that time, Senior was dead. Senior never knew about the child. So far as we know, Senior never knew that Celia was expected. So he never recognized the child. There's no question about that. What Junior did by his mother and grandmother was file in the district courts of Hidalgo County. It fell in Judge Mario Ramirez, 332nd District Court, a family code petition for legitimation. And such proof as was available was put on. And in that proceeding appeared Leonella, Senior's mother. She had executed a statement of paternity, the daughter Celia, and Judge Ramirez signed this decree of legitimation in January of 1986, a few months prior to this case going to trial.
Was notice of this legitimation proceeding given to the defendants?
No.
Maverick Marketing?
No. They were not parties, did not appear, and so far as I know, did not have any notice, actual or, although I guess if it's a public lawsuit, it could be imputed notice.
But this is no type of deal where there might be some collateral estoppel based on that proceeding, into this proceeding.
Unless the filing of the suit constitutes notice to the world that Junior is asserting that Senior was his parent.
Are you contending that courts are not entitled to look behind that judgment of legitimation?
We would like for this court to decide that that issue is final, that Junior is the son of Senior. But we would ask that if it's not conclusive, that we be able to put on the evidence. We would like to get to the jury on our two issues. What, just in effect, we are willing to retry the paternity case and let the jury decide, based on the testimony of grandmother and mother, whether or not Senior was the father. The anomaly in the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals upheld Judge Salinas' exclusion of that decree of legitimation. They upheld it, we believe, for erroneous reasons. It was upheld because the father was not a party, and because his representative was not a party. And we respectfully suggest that if there was a problem with the decree of legitimation, it was one of form only. Because as we set out in our brief, grandmother Leonella, the mother of Senior, was in fact his representative. She was not denominated as such in Judge Ramirez's legitimation order, but she was in fact. The boy's father was gone and had been gone for years. The boy had no property. There was no evidence that he would have needed a formal administration of the estate. And grandmother Leonella did appear in the lawsuit.
You're not contending this was an adversary proceeding in any way, were you?
I don't believe it was. I don't know, because both the maternal side and the paternal side, the mother of Senior, who the only one left, agreed that Junior was the child of Senior. And I would suggest that Leonella, Senior's mother, had no axe to grind, and in fact, her acceding to this legitimation could arguably have cut her off from any claims to the estate of Senior based on the wrongful death of Senior. So if perhaps in that sense it was adversary, because she did have an interest different from that of the baby. If it weren't for the baby, she would be the taker of his property, such as it was in real terms, but he had this cause of action against the Maverick Markets. The Court of Appeals held that because Leonella, Senior's mother, was not named as a representative, the decree of legitimation was void. They used the word void, not voidable. Because there was no one there, the father was not there to contest Celia's claim that Senior was in fact the father of Junior. And I would suggest that the anomaly with that argument is that if this case were for, not for the wrongful death of Senior, but for harm to Senior. And so if Senior were there to testify, a worst case scenario is that Celia says, Senior is the father of my child, and my child has the right to sue Maverick Market for injuring the father of my child. Worst case scenario is that father says, I'm not the father of that child. I suggest that in that worst case scenario, there is a jury issue. Does the jury believe Celia and give her son the right to sue the defendant for harm to the father? Or does the jury believe the father, who for whatever reason washes his hands and says, that's not my child?
But wouldn't there also be blood tests possible in that situation?
There would be blood tests, and there could be an involuntary paternity suit. And in fact, that's what would be occurring in the trial court. There would be the two issues. Number one, the paternity issues, and then once that threshold is crossed, we go to the ordinary issues of was there negligence and how much damages. Finally, on this point, I would suggest that if there is, in fact, this formal problem with the decree of legitimation, that is, that Leonella wasn't named as the representative, that one alternative this court has is to send this case back either to Judge Salinas' court and open the issue of paternity, or to Judge Ramirez's court to correct, if possible, the decree of legitimation. As I've suggested, but we think that the Court of Appeals' error in perception of this decree of legitimation was one of form only. It is in the record. It was an excluded evidence and excluded item of evidence at the trial of the case, and it reflects that Leonella was participating. She, in fact, executed a statement of paternity analogous to that which the father would have executed pursuant to the family code if he had been alive to do it.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Matlock. We know that under the wrongful death statute, we finally have decided that posthumous children are entitled to recover, legitimate children.
No question about that.
What is the status of the law about posthumous illegitimate children, even when their illegitimacy is established? What's the law on that under the Wrongful Death Act?
I'm having a little trouble with the question, Your Honor.
All right. no question, but now we've interpreted the Wrongful Death Act that posthumous legitimate children are entitled to recover. Posthumous illegitimate children, when there is no question of the biological father, what is their standing?
They can sue because they are recognized as children under the probate code, and under even under our opponent's concept, if the child had been recognized by his father, he would be a, quote, child, in the words of the probate code. That brings me to the statutory
case. Do you have a quick case you can give us on that?
The one that comes to mind is the Edwards transfer case, Your Honor, but if that's not it, I'm drawing a blank and I apologize.
That is the case.
All right. Let me raise the statutory construction issue that the court may get to in this case. As the Edwards transfer case out of Dallas holds, and that's the case that appears to be in conflict with the Corpus Christi opinion here, as that case holds, a wrongful death action is a statutory action, and it is available to the surviving spouse, children, and parents of the deceased. The problem is that children is not defined in the Wrongful Death Act. And our opposing counsel's position on this point, I believe, is that for the definition of children, the court should borrow or adopt the definition of the probate code and or the family code. And basically, those two codes combined provide some hoops to jump through, as it were, for a child to be the recognized child of its father, either born or conceived before or during marriage, legitimated by Chapter 13 Family Code proceedings, which we have here, or by a statement, voluntary statement of paternity from the father. And what we suggest is that that unborn, unrecognized children of parents who are not wed are a recognized class of individuals. And to adopt either one of these definitions would completely cut this class of child off from any ability to recover for the wrongful death of his father, because it can't be done after daddy is dead under the family code, except the way it was done in our case, by having the mother or personal representative stand in for the father in the legitimation proceeding.
Counsel, let me ask you this. There was never any acknowledgement here by the father that he was the father.
So far as we know, he didn't even know she was pregnant.
What would prevent a young girl who gives birth to a child and her mother from making this same kind of affidavit and going through the same procedure exactly, and making any man the father, any man who was deceased, the father of this child? Is there any safeguard at all for the deceased putative father?
All right.
Was there in this case?
Let me suggest that there might be two reasons that mother and daughter and illegitimate grandchild might wish to do this. Number one, they might wish to tap into daddy's property under the probate code. Number two, and what we have in this case, is to claim against the tortfeasor who deprives the child of support. It is clear, it is constitutional to require special proceedings to allow a child to inherit from his father. And the question is whether or not it's constitutional to require those same sort of proceedings in the case of a wrongful death action against a tortfeasor.
What Judge Heck said in Edwards' case was that under the probate code, an illegitimate child cannot inherit.
An unrecognized,
just a legitimate, the legislature has the authority to cut off the right of inheritance of an illegitimate child.
That's correct.
But the child may bring a wrongful death action and recover.
Because the legislature has not restricted the term children in the Wrongful Death Act.
That's right.
Counsel, I'm sorry I didn't get an answer to my question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, the question is, what's to prevent the mother and the child from picking anybody
okay.
to be the father?
The floodgate argument.
How about a Howard Hughes?
Okay. Number one.
What safeguards are there?
First of all, you've got to have a lawyer who's willing to take the case.
Let's skip that one. Go to the...
Okay, and I was not being facetious, Your Honor, because there is now in the Civil Practice and Remedies Code a duty on the lawyer to investigate. But skipping past that, there aren't that many wrongful death actions out there.
Is this supposed to make a difference? Is this a reason?
Well, I would suggest, Your Honor, that we trust...
Let me cut through the underbrush and get to my question.
Okay.
What's to prevent a young mother of an illegitimate child and her mother from going through the same procedure and making a rich man the father? He has no chance to defend himself.
If he's... Oh, you mean a dead rich man?
Yeah.
It's the jury system, Your Honor. I mean...
Well, they're only getting one side of the story.
Well, in the legitimation proceeding, they only get one side of the story, except in our case, the mother of the father, as a representative, although not denominated as such, came in and recognized the child as the child of her deceased son.
That was not a jury proceeding. Over.
But that was not a jury proceeding. But the point is, the father, the dead father, did have a representative in that paternity proceeding. And as I suggested to Judge Kilgarland a few minutes ago, we are not bound to accept that decree of legitimation as conclusive evidence in the basic negligence case. What we're asking is an opportunity to let Celia take the stand and say, Senior was the father of my child, and put it to the jury just like we put any other question to the jury. So the answer is, the safeguard is our jury system.
Well, the question of standing is usually a question of law. And whether or not the child has standing to sue is a question of law.
If he
the question would be for a jury, was the child the child of the deceased? That would be the fact question, but whether it's standing is a question of law.
I would only suggest that it would be unconstitutional to completely exclude this class of children, posthumous children of unwed parents, from any hope of claiming support from the tortfeasor who deprives the child of support of his father.
That's what Judge Heck said in Edwards.
And
violation of the 14th Amendment.
Equal protection.
Yes.
And I'm not sure I've yet answered your question, Judge, and I'm sorry. But I don't think the court can constitutionally bar the child from making the claim that he's my father.
You don't think the legislature or the courts could constitutionally prohibit illegitimate children in a situation like this from...
No, sir. I do not. No, sir. I do not. They cannot completely bar the child.
They can't draw a line at all, or where can they draw it?
The line can be drawn by the burden of proof. And it is constitutionally permissible, as suggested in the post-submission brief filed a couple of days ago.
What did the U.S. Supreme Court say in Levy versus Louisiana?
That an illegitimate child is entitled. This is an illegitimate child is entitled to sue under the Louisiana Wrongful Death Statute for death of their mother. And on the little card here, I've got the quote. Why should tortfeasors go free merely because the child is illegitimate? And what I was going to suggest is that it is constitutional, currently constitutional under the U.S. Constitution and Supreme Court cases, for either the court or the legislature to require a higher standard of proof for the illegitimate child. What you can't do, I suggest, is cut the child off completely. And a middle ground, as it were, would be to, on the paternity part of the case, require the child and his mother to prove that the decedent was the father by a clear and convincing standard. By
the mother's testimony and her mother's testimony.
No, it's the grandmother, it's the mother that the mother of the deceased parent who would inherit or have a claim or would get the money that her deceased child would get has acknowledged that this child is her biological grandchild.
That's correct. And she does, as I pointed out at the outset, have an adverse interest to the claims of this illegitimate child.
I know we're cutting into Mr. Garcia's time, but maybe he'll get an opportunity on the vote. I want to get back to the constitutional question.
Okay.
We're in a constitutional area here. Are there any U.S. Supreme Court cases that deal with a posthumous illegitimate child that you know of?
Not that I know of.
How about in other states? Because this should be an area that this problem should come up in other states.
And I have it right here, Your Honor. It's in our brief in the Court of Appeals. It's 2-2. Two states. You may not have our Court of Appeals brief in front of you.
No, we don't have it. This is a common problem. People do not write as long a brief to us, and we don't get those circulated among all 9 judges.
I've got an annotation on that, Your Honor. The annotation is at 78 ALR 3rd, 1230. And basically it points out that cases in other jurisdictions are split. Nevada, the posthumous child can bring an action for the death of his father. Michigan, same way. Contrary, Florida and Wisconsin. Once again, our basic constitutional argument is that the court or the legislature cannot constitutionally erect a barrier that totally keeps a child in this situation from making a claim for the wrongful death of his father. Admittedly, this is the toughest case there is. Unborn, unrecognized, 2.5 to 3 months in the womb.
You also know that only very seldom does it Texas court go to a jury on an issue other than preponderance of the evidence. In fact, there's old cases that say you can't do that. The judge has to come in and supply that extra burden, although we appear to be over that hurdle in a few narrow areas. But this would not be something that's ordinarily done to ask a jury to decide something by clear and convincing evidence.
I think that under the Texas Constitution, if it's decided, if it is a fact question and it is to be decided at all, it's not a mixed question. It may be a high burden question, but I don't think it's a mixed question. And I think under the Texas Constitution, if it is a question of fact, whatever burden is imposed by legislature or court, I believe it has to go to the jury. Okay.
Please, of course, for what remains in my time, I wanted to stress that I see this situation as being no different than, for example, a common law wife relationship. You can have, under Texas law, a common law wife relationship if a lady lived with this same rich man that Mr. Spears was concerned about 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and they held each other to be husband and wife, and then all of a sudden there's a wrongful death. Well, that's going to be a fact issue. She may come in a court and say, I now want to be a rich widow. I now am contending that I'm the common law wife as a result of the relationship that we had for this 1, 2, 3, 4 week period of time with this gentleman.
But there's a lot more witnesses.
Sir?
There's a lot more witnesses than we're likely to have in this situation.
Well, that is
I question whether or not the young mother's mother is in a position to testify that the legitimate child. She doesn't know. She wasn't there, I assume, when the copulation took place.
No. That is correct, Judge, but I
His mother, excuse me, his mother.
Sir, that's correct.
She was not there.
We may not have an overabundance of evidence, but we do have some evidence. And we, as a result, you know, this is the safeguard that you were asking for, again, and I realize the court's feelings about it, but I do feel as a jury system, we're going to have a fact issue for the jury to decide. Just as whether or not there was a common law wife relationship in the other case I earlier alluded to. We're going to have here a fact issue as to whether or not this child was in fact dead.
Would you say that the time is on your side from a scientific standpoint? I don't know if it's been done in Texas yet, but in some states we're getting into genetic evidence.
Yes, sir. I'm from... Oh. My knowledge.
I don't know much. I know however much you know. I know less.
Yes.
But I'm wondering now. Would you run through the what you had these photographs? Did you have any blood tests or any of that kind of?
No, sir. This arose. The claim was not filed by this child until about a year and a half or 2 years after after the death occurred, and by that time, of course, the deceased had already been buried. We had no blood tests. And what we had here was a situation of this child now faced with that particular situation where time was not on his particular side, having to work with what he had. And my knowledge about genetics came about as a recent article in 60 Minutes. No authority, but something about how they came up with it someplace in Florida, where now they can take a piece of your nail and be able to trace it down to whether or not you are in fact related to that particular individual. That was not the case during the time that I was involved in the trial of this particular case.
I'm sure the DPS probably had a blood test run, as they customarily do following car accidents, but I don't know whether you're entitled to it or not.
He was a passenger. This young boy was a passenger. DPS has a policy of taking blood tests of the drivers and not of the passengers, so that was another hurdle that we had. I realize I have no more time, but I apologize. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Ben Donald and Mr. Gene Creeley will present argument for the respondent. Mr. Donald will argue first.
May it please the court, my name is Ben Donald. I'm with the law firm of Meredith Sullivan Abernathy and Corpus Christi. I'm pleased to be before you today. I will try to keep my remarks short because I think the issues which are before the court are really quite narrow. This is, as Justice Speer says, basically a standing to sue case. The question is, does this child, born after the death of his father, where there is absolutely no evidence that the alleged father ever acknowledged the child or the pregnancy, has standing to sue under the wrongful death statute? And we submit that he does not. Texas law is clear that a procedure and a vehicle is established by which the parentage of an illegitimate child can be established. The Chapter 13 of the Family Code provides at least three methods. One, if the child is the product of the marriage. Second, if there is a legitimation procedure in accordance with the Chapter 13. And the third, if there is a statement of paternity by the father, not by the mother, as was done in this case. Neither of those three procedures was followed in this case. Apparently, counsel for the petitioner determined at the 13th or 24th hour that they ought to try to get some color of legitimation concerning this child, because the procedure to so-called establish the paternity was not followed until almost 2 years after the date of the deceased alleged father and approximately 2 weeks before the case was to go to trial in Hidalgo County. The trial court held the legitimation decree to be void, and that was the issue that the Court of Appeals sustained the directed verdict on, and I think the Court of Appeals was correct.
Now, who had the right to have that decree of legitimation thrown out, if you will? Yeah, who gets to declare that void? Certainly the parents of all these people didn't want to do it. The mother didn't want to do it. The child didn't want to do it.
who had standing to declare that void?
Well, I think obviously the judge did. Yeah, Judge
Well,
Sleet.
No way. We wrote, and but I can't remember the exact style, but I think it's Browning versus Humboldt Exploration. I know it was one of Pat Holloway's cases. That one district court could not collaterally void the judgment of another district court, which is what you had here, isn't it?
Your Honor, I'm not, in all deference, I'm not familiar specifically with that case, but it was my general understanding that in the case of a judgment which is void, that it is subject to collateral attack. I may be wrong in that respect, but I think the decree of legitimation, and it was not, it was being offered in our case as evidence on the point, and I think it was within the purview of Judge Salinas to decide whether or not it was credible evidence or any evidence of the point for which it was being offered. And he did not allow it into evidence because he found that it did not comply with the Family Code, Chapter 13.
Someone that's getting sued for big bucks certainly has the authority to challenge the standing of a plaintiff or his representative.
Well, and we certainly did, Your Honor. We raised the issue, we raised the objection, and the objection was sustained. And it was in response to our objection that it was excluded.
I may have misheard the petitioner, but I didn't hear them claiming that this should come into evidence and that's the end of the game. I mean, they wanted essentially to retry that issue in this forum, in your case for the district court, where you would have a chance to respond to it, but let it go to the jury and let the jury decide under perhaps a heightened burden of proof.
Your Honor,
I didn't hear them saying, we just come in the dead of night, go to the probate court or wherever and get an order and then come and that's conclusive.
Well, Your Honor, I think what, as I understood what petitioner was saying, he's saying that that this legitimation decree is evidence that the jury in this wrongful death action can be some evidence.
I don't think their case rises or falls on that. So I'm asking you to set that aside and just and address why all the evidence they gave in that court could not be represented in this court and let the jury make that determination. Why, as a matter of law, or as a matter of constitutional this unborn child's cause of action can be excluded?
Well, I think I trust that this answer is responsive to the court's question. I think the legislature has established the vehicle and the procedure by which the parentage of an illegitimate child is established, and that's pursuant to Chapter 13 of the Family Code.
But you admit you would have no right, I guess it goes to family court, not home. You admit you would have no right to notice or participation in that type of hearing. Is that correct?
I'm not sure that I can tell the court in all candor that had we been aware of it. I'm not aware of anything in the statute that would give us standing.
I mean, it seems to me if you're arguing for a procedure that determines this question that you don't even get to participate in.
I say this, the Family Code does not contemplate notice to us. It would be it would be just by sheer blind luck that we would be aware that such a proceeding, even if we chose to, and even if we had standing to intervene in the Family Code proceeding, as the proceeding that was allegedly going forward in Judge Ramirez's court.
And how did their proceeding not, before Judge Ramirez, not comply with the Family Code, with that second alternative?
Well, first of all, there was no service, talking about the legitimation proceeding. There was no service upon the personal representative of the estate. And if you read the petitioner's brief, it is somewhat of a bootstrap operation in that he says that there was no evidence in this case, not the Judge Ramirez's 333rd proceeding, but there was no showing in our case that there was any need for administration or the appointment of guardianship, which in my judgment is a shifting of what the test is and should be. It is the question of showing no need for administration and no need for guardianship. But he's rather unclear as to whether or not
as to where the source of the allegations in his brief about there not being any showing of a need for administration or guardianship. We not parties to the proceeding in Judge Ramirez's court, so we, and no record was made and was waived by the parties, so we don't know what evidence, if any, was presented to the court. But I guess the threshold and the principal issue is that the requirements of the family code were not complied with, in that the personal representative of the estate was not a party to the proceeding.
Are I hearing you to say that had they named the paternal, the alleged paternal grandmother, whatever her name is,
Leonella.
Leonella. If they'd gone to the trouble to have Leonella named guardian of the estate of Mike Sr., and then sued her, that would have been a permissible proceeding?
I think it certainly would be within the purview of the family code. It contemplates the rights of paternity, or, as you know, there was no right of illegitimate children had no rights of common law.
Then how could the Court of Appeals be correct in calling it a void as opposed to voidable decree by Judge Ramirez?
Well, the decree on its face did not reflect that any representative of the estate of the deceased was a party to the proceeding, and the statute clearly contemplates it.
Yes, but there's a distinction between void and voidable, isn't there?
There is, Your Honor. I'm not sure that I'd want to take a test on exactly what all the distinctions are, but I know there is a distinction. But
let me hear you. You're not making any kind of argument that a posthumous illegitimate child can never recover. That's a class that can be legitimately excluded from recovery.
Well, I don't think under Texas law that a posthumous illegitimate child has standing to recover under the wrongful death statute.
Unless they're legitimized under the family code.
Unless they're legitimized under the family code, and I think a serious question as a matter of just academic discussion exists as to whether or not the family code contemplates a procedure by which legitimacy can be determined after the death of the father. I know Manuel.
That's the second ground we're talking about.
Manuel versus Specter at least indicates that type of proceeding is available. But I think Justice Cardena, in his dissent, accurately points out that statement is really dictum in that proceeding. But even if you were to say that a posthumous illegitimate child is entitled to recover under the wrongful death statute, I think you'd have to say that the safeguards which the legislature has adopted by virtue of the family code in terms of how you determine that have to be followed, and that the interest of the state well justifies making that distinction.
Counselor, in Nelson versus Cruz, we held that a child could not be denied a cause of action for medical malpractice which he had no knowledge existed up until the time the statute of limitations determined the legislature had run. In effect, we held that you cannot exclude a cause of action. The legislature does not have the authority to exclude a cause of action that the child does not know had accrued before he knows it. In this case, if I understand your argument, you're saying that the legislature in the probate code, the family code, has decreed